Hey, this is Richard Deitch of the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast, where each week we interview a member of the sports media about their job and their process. This week, our guest is the ESPN radio host, Ryan Russillo. You know him from the Russillo and Kanell show that airs in the afternoon on ESPN Radio, among their most popular offerings. In a hour conversation where Ryan is really, really honest about a lot of things, including why he does not have an agent, about his own place in the ESPN ecosystem. He talked pretty openly about being perceived as a sidekick, which he was by many internally when he worked his years with Scott Van Pelt.
There's probably some people that'll listen to this and walk around where I'm at going, no, that's exactly who he is. You know, he never should have moved over to the other chair instead of Scott.
We'll also talk about how Ryan prepares for his show daily. We'll get into, he is very much an NBA wonk, does a lot of summer league stuff. We'll get into his contacts in the league. He was pretty well ahead of the curve on some of the big deals, including LeBron to Cleveland and Durant to Golden State. And we'll get into pretty deep on just the idea of whether one can be apolitical on their shows these days, or are you sort of forced to talk about politics and social issues when you are hosting a show, particularly at ESPN. We got all that and more. ESPN Radio's Ryan Russillo. I think you're going to enjoy this one. Let's head out to Ryan in Connecticut. All right, and we bring in Ryan Russillo of ESPN Radio. I'm actually not sure where Ryan is today. I'm assuming somewhere in Connecticut. But welcome to the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Richard, thanks, man. I appreciate it. I am in Connecticut. Usually I'm here. One of those deals with having an everyday thing. It's funny. People be like, well, why do you live there? I'm like, well, that's because that's where I work. So,
yes, proximity is pretty important in terms of radio.
Fairly simple reason.
All right, Ryan, here's what I want to start off with. It's interesting. I know so many people that you know at ESPN, yet we have really barely interacted. A couple emails, maybe here or there. But I did write about you or interacted with you and published it in 2015 when you re-signed with ESPN. And I want to read something that you said, because it's interesting to think about this now 2 years later when I asked you why you re-signed. So here's what you said. This is open quote. The obvious answer is that it's ESPN. I've been here almost 10 years. I'm not sure I ever felt more appreciated than now. I wanted to live in LA and do something different. I wanted to challenge myself and get away from the East Coast after difficult 2 years for my family. One of my parents got sick, then they got divorced, and I was dumped 30 minutes before my show twice. Sorry for bringing that up. These last two years have sucked, and I wanted to go swimming. I'm not bullshitting you. And I miss Carissa. This is Carissa Thompson, a good friend of yours, who then moved to LA. During my time here, it's been weird. I had one manager tell me not to talk on the air during the baseball show I hosted. My favorite quote was, we need Scott, this is Scott Van Pelt, to talk more, but don't feel like you need to talk less. So I was ready for something different, but these guys have been incredible. They made me feel like they really wanted me. That, Ryan, was a pretty interesting and honest answer to a question that I did not expect, not necessarily dishonesty, but for you to go in that direction. 2 years later, how would you say your state is in relation to when you signed with ESPN in 2015?
Wow, that was a really good intro there.
Thank you.
You caught me at a good time at the time of me answering that, where I just was sort of in this philosophical thing where I'm like, I'm going to let it ride. Well, I'd say I make more money, and my name is now first on the show. So I really felt like this is going to be a great run for me. I felt like it was going to help me get out of Scott's shadow. And any other questions or that are answers that I have about Scott, and I want to preface it first and foremost here saying he is one of my closest friends. And we talk all the time, and we talk about how much we miss just doing the show because we had so much fun with it. But for me personally and professionally, it was never going to work for me the way I wanted it to work for me if it was always SVP and Russillo, or in the beginning when it was the Scott Van Pelt show, because he is a massive star. He's one of the biggest stars going. So I always felt like when I said something that may have been interesting, it just didn't resonate the same way And it also felt like, you know, they didn't know what to do with me in the beginning of that. So I felt like with this move, him going to do his thing, because he got a great gig. And I had told him prior to me even thinking I was going to resign at ESPN that I said, I think I'm done with this 6-year run, even though I do love the show that we have. But for me, like, this isn't what I want to do. And I've never asked anybody at work, you know, did you always see me as somebody that would just be a sidekick? Because I never, if you told me like that's all I'd ever be the rest of my life or in this career, I would do something else. I think some people are cut out for it. Some people like not having any pressure. Some people like just saying, hey, whatever you guys want to do, I'll show up 5 minutes before the show. That's just never been the way that I've been when I worked on a show. So I felt like now not working with him, I could be the exact same person. And now I'll get the recognition, I'll get the credit, and the ego things that you need and that you want when you're somebody that works on air. You know, if you have a talk show, you probably have a pretty big ego, or you at least think you're important enough that people want to hear what you have to say. So I think, you know, I'm actually a year and a half later than that, because I'm right in the middle of this contract. I have less answers, I would say, than I thought I would about where this is all going, and I'm sure we'll get into that a little bit here, but I'm not unhappy I'm not working with Scott by any means. It's not that kind of thing. It wasn't a bad breakup. It was just something we both needed to do. But I'm still thinking about L.A.
Well, it's interesting. One of the things that happens to people at ESPN, but I'm sure other organizations too in sports media, is you get typecast. Jermele Hill and Michael Smith were guests on this podcast a week ago. And one of the things that they were really frank about it was that they sort of had to, on their own, create their own identity with essentially no promotion. They had to fight to create an identity, I think maybe is the best way to say it. And so for you, what was it like sort of having to at least hear externally that you're a sidekick, you're not a lead guy? And maybe the sort of the most frustrating thing would be some people actually in-house believing that.
Yeah, and you know what, Richard? I think there's also a part of me, and I think a part of all of us, we have to go, hey, maybe that's exactly who I am, and I just don't like the answer, you know? I mean, I'm not really there yet. I don't think that's the answer to the Ryan Russillo question. But there's probably some people that will listen to this and walk around where I'm at going, no, that's exactly who he is. You know, he never should have moved over to the other chair instead of Scott. But I'll say a couple things. First of all, my start there is different from everybody else's in radio. Okay, radio now is, if you're a huge star in something else, you get your own radio show without having any radio background.
Right.
And I get that because it's whose name can we attach to something and have it be something that you don't have to introduce this person to America because they already have the relationship with them. And that makes all the sense in the world. But it's the hardest job to do. Everybody thinks they can do it. It's so much harder. It's 3 hours. You wake up every day and go, okay, now what am I going to do for 3 hours? And then what am I going to do the day after that? And I've been in this slot, this afternoon slot, 7.5 years. My stretch now consecutively is second only to Mike and Mike. And I think when people hear that, they'll go, wait a minute, what? He's been in that slot that long? He's right. And when I think about my start, I was just some clown that would drive down from Boston when I was 29 years old because I couldn't believe they were letting me fill in on these shifts. But they needed somebody. They needed a body. There was always moving carts. Somebody would be moving around. It would change the whole weekend lineup. And, I mean, it was just very unorganized. And I ended up capitalizing on that because I would go, I don't care about having a family. I don't care about friends. I don't care about a social life. I want to be at ESPN so bad. Like, this is what I'm going to have to do. So I would get in the car and drive from ComAv down to Bristol 2+ hours, and I would go back that night after the shift, park the car at 4 a.m., and then I would be, you know, I'd sleep, play hoops, and then at 2 o'clock I'd get a call saying, can you cover tonight's shift from 7 to 10 or 10 to 1? And I would do it. And I did those things for 3 years, and Scott was like, hey, I really like that guy, and then I get the gig with Scott. So I think the problem, whatever the issues have been for me in the growth, and people can say, well, look, you got your name on a show, you've got a deal, they re-signed you, they like you. And I know there are people there that absolutely like me, like Dave Roberts and Trog, and these guys have been great. Skipper's actually always been really good to me. And there's not a single person who is like Rob Savinelli in our talent department who I trust more, who I can talk to more. I mean, Savinelli is like, I feel like the biggest star at ESPN, and don't even, you know, I think people outside of the business don't even know him. But other people have always had kind of that touch from an executive that really is important, and their success is going to be judged on how successful they are of the people that they've deemed the next big thing. I've never had that. I've never had it once. And I think like when I hear Jamel and Michael, who are friends, say that they're the least promoted, like, you want to have that contest with me? Because you're going to lose. So, I mean, their thing is huge right now, and it's awesome. They deserve all of those things. But, you know, I'm on a radio show right now that does well, but I don't know that, you know, I don't know that people, like, I look at some of the rankings, or I'll look at some of these things here and there, and you go, and this kind of got into my rant last week, where you go, am I doing this the right way? Where I'm doing a show where I think I'm doing it the right way, and I think I'm good at it, but I'm kind of at this crossroads of trying to understand if this is the right way to still do the show.
Maybe I should basically just have every guest on who is the least promoted at ESPN be like kind of an awesome like podcast series. Although maybe I can't get any more now with you and Jamel and Michael. But this brings up, Ryan, a serious thing. I was going to get to this later, but I'll get to this now since you went there. What you talked about last week was really interesting to me, and it struck a chord. I'm not sure exactly how I even – whether I'm in 100% agreement with you, but I really respect that you brought it up and we're sort of trying to work through it on air. As the son of a psychologist, I love when I hear that, just by the way, Ryan. It's just like when I hear people talk on air and try to figure it out. And that is like
right.
Sports talk radio – in some quarters, has become very politicized. Certainly, there are people on ESPN Radio who discuss politics and social issues. I mean, you know, people that your show, Le Batard does that, Bomani does that. You know, there's even areas sometimes of Mike and Mike where they do it, but they don't do it. They don't sort of go, I think, nearly as deep as some other shows. And there are definitely people at Fox Sports Radio who absolutely do it. So. You were sort of musing sort of like this idea of like, well, where does like a show like mine fit in this universe? Am I supposed to do this? And if I do this, am I supposed to only go with a specific political orthodoxy? And I wanted to just ask you, what was sort of what was running through your mind when you started to talk about this on air, outside of obviously the fact that we live in very divisive times and everybody's talking about politics?
It's something that had been kicking around, and Danny and I had talked about before the show, but it's definitely something we had talked about a little bit off the air, where you go, okay, you know, what's a good segment? And, I mean, this is, I know I can ramble because that's what I get paid to do, but I think it'll start this way. There's two things that happened. When Catherine Smith was hired by the Buffalo Bills, an assistant coach, female coach, everyone that did the topic only praised it. And I went, wow, that's interesting. I'm like, I bet if that happened a couple of years ago, you'd have some guys, you know, the old school talk radio guy, because I don't consider myself that. I'm not even that old for this industry, but it would have been, oh, you know, what is he doing? You know, I can't believe they hired a girl, you know, that kind of thing. And then in a very quick amount of time, it completely transitioned to only praise. So by the time the topic had gotten to our show, we did it, I think, twice out of 12 segments. And I was fascinated, and my job is, what is relevant? What is being talked about? What doesn't seem like it's completely out of left field? And what's a way to make it interesting? And is there a way to talk about something that's been talked about in a completely different way? And Danny and I did that by going, you know, I just think it's fascinating that you cannot criticize this. Like, you couldn't say, ah, the resume seems a little weak, because you will get destroyed by the media. You're going to get destroyed by people that you work with. And guess what happened? I got destroyed by people that I work with. And I thought it was funny, and I was debating with some of our female on-air personalities on radio, and they were saying, you know, basically kind of like, how dare you, and why would you say women don't belong in sports? I go, no, you missed the point. My point was that you can't even question it. You can't even wonder if it's a good hire. You can only say it's a good hire in today's climate. So then the Missouri thing happened, and I was really uncomfortable with the Missouri thing, because I came on the show Monday, and I go, I know I'm supposed to come on and just praise these students for boycotting the game or threatening to boycott the game, and this is just another sign that power is shifting and that, you know, people aren't going to stand for this anymore. But I'll tell you, Richard, I believe nothing on the surface. I don't believe anything, and it happens all the time in sports. So at first I'll go, okay, so this is what the story is. This is what everybody's saying, and if I'm going to talk about this and I'm really interested in this, even if I'm not talking about it and it's just something that's interesting to me, I will then spend hours going through all the stuff trying to form my own opinion, because I just don't trust anybody anymore. So when I was reading all the Missouri stuff on Monday, and you're kind of going through it, it's still this weird sports story because it's really not a sports story, but once the football team decides to make a play on this thing, then we're all kind of like, we're all in on it now, and every show's doing it. I went home that night and I go, you know, I don't like the segment I did. I felt like I didn't take a stand. I felt like I was kind of indifferent, and I feel like I was afraid. I was afraid of being critical of any of the stuff going on at Missouri's campus, because I was afraid that as a white guy that now has a good job, that I was just going to be out of touch and that I don't get it. Because that's the other thing I've learned too, is that, and no one wants to even hear me say this, but as a white guy who has a thought on any social issue, I've only learned that I'm wrong. If I don't agree with you, then I'm just wrong and I don't get it. I'm out of touch. And it's just, look, I understand my deals better than most people's deals in this country, but as a talk show guy who has an opinion on everything, you hear it all the time. So I was afraid to do the Missouri segment that I think I wanted to do. So I went home that night on Monday, and I watched everything. I watched the student who started the hunger strike and his tweets about how the president run him over with his car, and it's still been 4 days since he got an apology. I found the video that anybody can find on YouTube of a car not running him over and trying to back out of his way, and he ran up to the car. So I go, well, so wait a minute, this is the guy leading the charge? And then I went and watched and read the interviews of the student body president. And all the stuff they're referencing, it was like, you know, that's unfortunate that somebody drove by in a pickup truck and said something terrible. That's unfortunate that somebody made a mess in a bathroom. But now we're going to have demonstrations where we're talking about this campus is essentially unsafe and somebody's going to lose his job. And what those kids don't realize is that they were used by an administration that wanted a president out of there. And that's the segment I did on Tuesday. And I felt so much better about myself on Tuesday because I did the segment that I believed in and was honest, was really how I felt, as opposed to kind of soft selling it on Monday, that I was like, I don't ever really want to do that again. But the reason I went on the rant last week was more of a looking around and saying, I feel like the Missouri topic, if not Missouri specifically, but anything that's social awareness, social issues, anti-Trump stuff, it is leading shows now. And look, I didn't vote for Trump. I wouldn't vote for that guy. I'm pretty down the middle on a lot of things. So, you know, I don't know if you need that resume to continue the podcast, but I just felt like I've been doing a job and preparing myself to do a job in a way that doesn't really have any value anymore. I watch 40 hours of NBA hoops a week. I watch 26 hours of NFL and college football a week. I mean, there's a reason I'm still single. That's the way I've done it. I mean, I used to be a minor league baseball announcer who carried around a baseball reference so I could make sure I could memorize any one of the transactions that these guys have been traded for. I was scared to death of going on the air and being wrong. And I think it's so funny when I look around and I go, I'm the idiot. I've done this wrong. There's no value in being right all the time. No one looks at you and says, you know what, that was great that you remembered the second round protection on that trade on draft night. Like, no one cares. So when I think about all the time that I've invested in this, and yeah, I've done pretty well, but I'd like to do better, and I see kind of the course and the way these shows are being programmed around me, and it's not me knocking it. It wasn't me attacking anyone. It was me just kind of putting my hands out to my side and up in the air going, is this what the sports talk show job is? Because if it is, then I haven't prepared myself well. And if I'm not in line with other voices, it feels like that voice will be incredibly unpopular. And I wonder if, you know, when I'm up, say, in a year and a half and 2 years, my contract, is that something where we go, we want the guy that's not doing the social issues? Does this thing turn back around? And that's an answer I definitely don't have for you.
All right, that's interesting. You brought up a lot of things that we can get to.
Sorry.
It's good.
It's kind of just bookend it all.
No, it's a podcast. You have to go along here. You know, and listen, I certainly have some issues with the content, but one thing Colin Coward's always said is really not about being right. It's about being interesting. And that's how he approaches that. Yeah, I think he is right, although it's a long conversation why it's sort of depressing that he might be right. Ryan, something that from what you just said there that was really interesting to me is you might not get this outright. Like, somebody may not walk up to you and say this, but in your position, have you felt external pressure to be on a certain side when you are hitting topics that are either political or about social issues? I eventually want to get to Danny because he's one of the few people, at least on Twitter, who, I don't know how much is shtick and how much is real, who will sort of take a very conservative side as opposed to a progressive side. But I wonder if at all, as a host, do you feel that, let's say the Kaepernick issue happens, as an ESPN host, are you feeling any kind of external or internal pressure that you have to sort of support what Kaepernick is doing?
I'll start with a very kind of a general thing. Like, do I feel like if I wanted to do, hey, Trump isn't so bad and here's why?
Right.
Like, I don't think I would do that thing because I'm not sure I would believe that. But
right.
I don't know. I mean, no one's really doing it. You know, no one's really doing it at our place, so I don't know how it would go over. Am I afraid to do it that way? No, not really. But I think when you look at the diversity of ESPN, which is something to be celebrated,
definitely,
that it's fairly predictable to know where people are going to align themselves politically. Like, none of this is really breaking news when certain on-air people feel differently than other on-air people, right? Like, I don't think it's necessarily a surprise.
Yeah, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I want you to sort of get in your head on this. I do think, listen, there's a lot of people who believe ESPN is a liberal left-leaning network. In some cases, they are. In some cases, it's actually not the case, and it's just competitors who are totally using that for their own takes. But I do believe that if you have progressive opinions on certain things or left-leaning opinions, I think you can go further in your position as a talk host or an opinion person than you would on the other side. I do believe that.
I think the support from other writers would be there going left.
Correct.
Right. But I don't really believe that with ESPN. Like, I don't think – nobody's high-fiving Jamel and Michael Smith in the cafeteria because they like their take and then rolling their eyes at Danny Cannell.
Right, okay.
Like, that doesn't happen. I think that's exaggerated from the outside. So if I think about what I want to do, like, I'm usually going to end up doing what I want to do, and, you know, we'll see what happens after that. But I know that as far as colleagues, I know, like, Levitard and I disagree on a ton of stuff, okay? He'll say at times, I don't understand it because I just don't get it. And I'll be like, man, it feels like that's the counter to me any time as a white guy if I'm trying to have any commentary on any kind of racial issue. Like, I can't ever maybe write about anything. Like, I'm always wrong about it. But he and I are always cool because it's just, like, we respect each other, and I think he's a great guy. And I think the way he does his show is a way that they're like, man, it's funny because you can see other people more and more now that he's nationally trying to do their show. They want to do, like, the stuff Dan's doing. But I've never felt, like, scared to say anything. I didn't feel scared after I did that rant last week because I felt like if you really listen to what that rant was and not what the headlines were on Breitbart, and I mean, some of the headlines that I saw for it were insane.
Like, I didn't see any of that. What were the Breitbart headlines? I missed it.
It was Ryan Russillo trashes all of his colleagues at ESPN. Just like, well, that's, you know, unfortunately, I think one person may not have actually listened to what I said and came up to me. And it was actually, once I got back to Connecticut, this woman had said, you know, I was really disappointed in what you did. And I was like, you were? Did you listen to it? She's like, well, no, I hadn't had a chance to click on the link on Breitbart. And I was like, well, wait a minute, why were you disappointed me? If you were reading Breitbart, you probably would have liked it. But I know what everybody thinks. I know what everybody says. I know everybody says, oh, ESPN is super left, and it's promoted. It's not promoted. And the other side, I don't really feel like I'm not afraid to talk about something. And the thing is sometimes you're going to hear me, I'm going to sound like a liberal who went to school at University of Vermont, who grew up in Massachusetts. Like, you're going to hear me say things like, oh, wait a minute, that kind of surprised me. And then other times you're going to hear me sound like a guy that's finally been able to save money after being broke until I was like 33 years old. So I don't think it's as big of a deal as people make it out to be. But I would say there are things socially, if I said there's some layups to be, like, if I had to take one way on something social, I'd say, okay, you know what, this is going to play really, really well with everybody in the media. And everybody would start retweeting it and be like, man, you get it, you get it, you get it. Where I think there's some other things, if you just ask an open-ended question and try to say, hey, maybe I'm going to have an open mind about this issue of race or this issue of gender or this, and it's like, how do you not get it? You're the worst. So I think the industry on the whole seems to be more left, and I think left in a way that it's really funny, I find, that I think there are times the left has felt almost completely unaccepting or their just inability to listen to anybody that doesn't completely align themselves. So sometimes I catch myself in that crosshair.
You know, one of the things that I really liked about your show when you did with Scott and wrote this 1 year at the end of the year when I was sort of giving some, you know, love to, like, what I thought was sort of the best things in sports media that year, is that you guys didn't necessarily, like, have to, like, have a take, if you know what I'm saying. You didn't have to, like, come out and, like, here's my take on this issue, and I'm only giving you this take because I want to provoke or I want attention or I want people to react to this. There were just times where I really, like, appreciated your show. It just felt that it was a discussion about something. You tried to sort of elevate sports talk where it was a discussion as opposed to, you know, I'm going to come up with something because I know it's going to go viral because I know I'm going to get attention. You know, obviously the worst of that is when sort of, you know, Bayless just sort of just goes heel on LeBron, et cetera, et cetera. But you mentioned something about, like, earlier in this podcast, like, is there still a place for that? And I wonder, like, is there still a place in the medium for someone who, I mean, I guess everything's a take, but is there a place in the medium for, like, interesting or smart neutrality where you can just discuss something but not come out, like, so guns blazing about something? You think people will still listen to that?
Well, if there isn't a place, then I'm going to have to come up with another plan quickly, because it's the only way I've been able to do it. It's the only way. I wanted people, even if they didn't like me on the air, go, you know what, though? I don't like him, but man, that guy knows his stuff. Like, that's what I went in with, and it was such an incredible waste of time. Like, I'm telling you right now, I've done it wrong. When younger people ask me, what should I do? I go, don't do it the way I do it, because it's not valued. It's great when I go to the NBA Combine, and I have GMs, I have coaches, I have all these people come up to me, now that I've been doing this there as long as I have, and say, you're the best. And I'm like, what? And they go, you're the best. Like, I don't always agree with you, but God, you know your stuff. You put the work in. It's clear you talk to teams. And you just, you know what I mean? Like, you're reasonable about everything. And I didn't set out to be reasonable about everything. I think there are times where I say some stuff and it doesn't resonate. I'm like, how did that not resonate? But then again, I guess my brand is just that I'm the reasonable guy. And in this age of so much competition, like, I can see the other people that are in this industry where I go, well, you didn't really believe that, but you just felt like things have been quiet for a little while. Like, Colin used to tell me it's great to just be incredibly wrong once a month. And I was like, how, what? Like, how do you do that? He's like, oh man, it's great. And then I started paying attention to it, and he's incredible. Like, Colin gets radio better than anybody else. I think Mike and Mike, you know, people can make fun of them all they want. Mike and Mike get mornings. Mornings are light. Mornings are supposed to be fun. You know, people are stuck in traffic. They don't want to be beat over the head. There's a reason why it's been successful. You know, I think Le Batard's interviews and the way he does them, you know, sure, there's some misses, and he would laugh hearing me say that, but when he hits and it's different, it's right, it's so good, and I wish I could do some more of that stuff. But when I think about, like, what I try to do and all the different things I'm capable of, I'm like, I think I have all these elements of all these different guys, but the problem is I don't wake up every day going, what can I say that's going to end up on a blog? And I think you kind of need to think that way. Like, you want to think in retweets. You want to think in likes. And what I do is, it might be a couple of weeks before there's something that I say that I think is so out there, but there's also this other side to me where I go, does anybody pay attention to the fact that I was the first person at ESPN to say LeBron was going back to Cleveland? And it wasn't in hot take form. It was sourced. And I said it Wednesday, and he was back there Friday. I had Love re-signing when everybody else had him being traded. I had Durant as a possibility going to Golden State before anybody did. And that was based on conversations, and people, like, they don't really know how to, they're like, wait a minute, what did he did that? Like, I've had people talk about me and go, wait a minute, he knew that Melo wasn't going to get traded because of the Love thing? And I had that. I had it on a tweet on a day off, so when I was going back there. So I thought all of that stuff would be really valuable. We'd be like, man, you're going to have a guy that's plugged into the NBA because he talks to people, and he's been going down to these draft camps starting in Portsmouth, Virginia in 2003. Like, what a threat this guy will be, because he can do the show, he can host, he knows the content. And when Scott and I would sit there, and he would get so mad at me because we'd go, okay, this happened. And I would say, okay, but what is the discussion? What is interesting about the next 8 minutes as opposed to this team is bad, this team is good? Like, let's figure it out. And we would get there, and people liked it, but I think people liked it more because it was Scott, and Scott was a huge name, than me doing the exact same thing. Like, because I don't feel like I'm doing anything different except talking a little bit more, and the name of the show. So I get frustrated when I think, oh, I would think this would be the thing. Like, I would think in this world of hot takes and everybody trying to out-hot take each other, that I'd become the most valuable guy because the audience would know that I wasn't full of shit. Like, wouldn't that be like, I look at some of these lineups and I go, you need a guy like me more than ever before, because I'm the one the audience goes, wait a minute, I know he actually believes that. Like, I remember when the draft was coming out, it was Andrew Luck and RG3, and I bet one of the first take producers that Skip would be an RG3 guy. And he was like, no, he won't. I go, dinner. And then guess what? That was him. Now, I mean, look, I couldn't do what he does because I couldn't keep track of it all, right? And I wouldn't want to be so unliked. I mean, it'd be great to make that money. I get it. It'd be great to be that promoted and that featured. And there's a part of me that's always going to like Skip because he was so nice to me when we lived in the same hotel for those long years. And we were talking about college football in Oklahoma, and he was great to me. And then I went on the show. I corrected him once, and he banned me from the show. And I couldn't be on the show for like 6 years. And then Horowitz asked me to apologize to him. And I go, well, why am I apologizing? He's the one that had me banned from the show. And now we don't like each other. But I look at that and go, the money's great, but Like, everybody knows the routine.
Yeah. And so, first of all, hearing that Horowitz story, shake my head at that. But yeah, right. Listen,
Jamie's my guy. Like, but I, you know, he was trying to like get me back on the show.
Right. Right.
Skip didn't want me on
the
show.
Yeah. But Jamie, I particularly don't think Jamie makes great shows. I like him. I think he's a
Jamie makes great shows. I just think he's awesome.
We'll have to disagree on that. But I'm saying, like, you should not. I mean, Jamie's sort of talent. This is Jamie Horowitz talking about, president of Fox Sports One. His talent is, I think, connecting with talent and understanding who each individual is. For your sake, you never make somebody like you go in and kiss the ring of Skip Bayless. You believe what you believe.
Yeah, but it's his show. Like, if he didn't want me on the show, I wasn't going to be. If somebody does, I don't want somebody on my radio show. They're not.
Of course, incredibly enough. Incredibly enough, Ron, your career has continued without that guest spot on First Take.
No, but I was super bummed because it was like 6 years ago, and the guys came down and like, "Oh my God, you're incredible! Like, where have you been?" And I go, "Well, I've been right down the hall." And so, you know, that was a bummer. And yeah, I mean, I take it personally now too, because I'm just like, you know, kind of mess with me, but I don't have any problem with Jamie telling me to apologize to him. I just knew it wasn't going to happen.
Yeah, well, I got a problem. I'll continue the anger for it then. I talked before this podcast. I talked to Adnan Burke, who has been a guest on this podcast and is really great respect for you. And one of the things he told me that was real, and I know you've worked with him in the past, really interesting, he said about you is he's never seen anybody prep more for a radio show. And he's talking about daily prep in terms of, you know, he said he would watch you read as much as anybody. You'd print out stuff. You're highlighting stuff before the show. You really, and I think you've already mentioned this podcast, you really take the prep part seriously because you don't want to be wrong. For younger people in the business, understanding obviously that you've told them that you're doing it wrong, but I think people will get something out of how you prepare. So whether it's for a single show or whether it's for a week of shows, what is your general preparation plan?
Here's how the day plays out, right? So chances are I've stayed up till 1 a.m. watching NBA stuff, and then I try to get to bed by 2, and at that point, sports off. Has to be off for that last hour. Wake up probably about 8, turn on SportsCenter, check out what's going on in the morning shows, start to formulate, okay, did anything happen last night? So, like, today is an example. You know, that Wizards-Cavs game was really good, but, like, for me and for the show, it's like it has to be more than just Wizards-Cavs is that good. Is Wizards a real, you know, Wizards, are they a threat in the East? Is that good enough nationally for a show? No, probably not, unless it's really, really slow. And then, ultimately, you get the Frank Isola piece, and then you have the Cavs element of this whole trade. So, like, okay, so that's your new thing now. So that's what's going to work. So I start texting some guys around the league, like, hey, has this thing shifted? I was saying 2 weeks ago that, you know, LeBron wasn't necessarily pushing for Melo and didn't even want to get rid of Love, and wait to see how that stuff comes in. I'll go up on all the major sites. I'll check it all out. Like Super Bowl week, I would try to read some from the AJC. You know, I still know a bunch of people in Boston. So, like, I always feel like sometimes nationally you can lose some of that really local touch there. And I'll probably spend, if I get to work between 9 and 10-ish, I'll probably spend 2 hours reading in my office and then checking my phone. And then we go in pre-show meeting for 11. That usually takes about 30 minutes. And then that's where we really try to hack it out. And some days it's really easy because you know exactly what you have to do. And maybe you're even guest heavy. And then Danny and I kind of go over some guest questions, which I can tell you right now, every one of us could be better. But we get to this point where we think we're so good that we don't need to prep for guests. And then we just kind of wing it. And then when I start feeling like I'm getting a little sloppy with guests, then I kind of tighten it back up and I get really pissed at myself when I do that. And you'd be like, oh, I'm good. I got Trent over. Be fine. And you're like, what? Wait a minute. That question sucked. Why did I just ask it? That happens to be in the middle of conversations on the air all the time where I'm kind of correcting myself. And then, you know, you've paid maybe an interview or two and then you're live 1 to 4. And then I will go to the gym. I will eat. And then I'm right back at games from 7 to 1 a.m. And that's what I've been doing for 7.5 years.
Ryan, I've been told you don't have an agent. Why?
For me, it was a complete waste of time. I was really excited about it in the beginning. I had somebody local in Boston that was a great guy to me, but I just felt like, oh, I'm at ESPN now. I need somebody bigger. So I ended up signing with CAA, and I thought it was so freaking cool. I'm like, I can't believe these guys like me. I was even embarrassed about the rental car that I had as a minivan in 2008 when I was out there for a USC game. And they put on an incredible presentation as far as just a one-on-one thing, like, hey, you should be doing this. We can make you money here. We can make you money here. We can do all these different things. And that's just not what it was whatsoever. And I don't like the idea of an agent being in the room hearing about my career, my future. like I would hear from other people. I think a lot of us are very insecure. I think a lot of us are scared and would just not be able to handle it being in a room with an executive, having them tell you personally, this is what I don't think you're capable of, and this is what I don't think you're worth, and all these different things. Like, this is my life. Why would I pay somebody else 10% to understand that conversation when it would truly help me where my standing is with where I work? So I haven't done one of those. I'm actually looking forward to it. And for me, like, there's what, four or five places I would work in the country. Like, I can get any one of those guys on the phone. They don't get them on. Like, I don't need an agency to do that. So I think when you're with CAA or with your really, really big place, there's some guys at CAA I really like, and there's some guys I really don't. You know, if you're one of their main franchises, you're going to have a great run, and you're going to be taken care of, and you're going to be a priority, and all the other pieces they have, that's going to be valuable to you because you're going to be the important hire. And then CAA is great. Like, then Nick Khan's the man, you know, if you're one of those people. I was not one of those people. And I was there for 8 years, and I just went, all right, well, you know, I'm just, this isn't cool anymore. This isn't what, you know, I expected. I don't know, I guess I expected a little bit more. And I had, you know, everybody has their level of BS, and everything we do, everybody has a day-to-day. There's all sorts of BS. But I had a guy pat me on the shoulder, look me in the eye, say, hey, you're looking great, bro. And I went to him. I said, hey, you should give me the ESPN body issue, kidding around. And he said, you know what? He goes, I actually talked, and he named an executive. He goes, I talked to that person last night, said that they work out with you every morning at the ESPN gym, and we're going to get you in next year's body issue. And I looked at him and was like, I was kidding, dude. And I've never worked out in the ESPN gym in the morning with that executive ever. And once that happened, I went, you know what? I'm done here. So I don't know if I'll ever get an agent again, just because, like, what is it that they're going to do? Like, is somebody going to pay you $3 million because of that when they only wanted to pay you $1.5 million? I mean, I think some of the weird stuff happens and some of the rumors you hear about somebody's salary and some numbers and some of that stuff. But, like, if I talk to younger people in the business, I'd be like, you better make sure they're telling you exactly what they're going to bring to you. And nothing changes for your career. You never get the money you want. None of this stuff is ever going to work out for you unless the place wants to keep you and they think you're going to leave. And you do that with your abilities far more than any agent. The agents don't trick these people. You know, look, there's always the story here or there, but for the most part, this industry isn't just a bunch of agents tricking executives into paying us a ton more. And I think that's kind of how it's presented. And I was not, I want an agent to be somebody that's a part of Team Russillo, and Team Russillo is a person of one right now.
That's interesting. First of all, I really appreciate the honesty. You don't often hear people talk about this. Do you think...
I don't care anymore. I mean, I just don't. I don't understand. I'm not going to lie to you about it, and I don't feel like me being honest. Like, I'm not dumping on the place. My relationship wasn't great. Other people have great relationships there, and it's no different than any other place. I just think it's so cool in the beginning. I'm on TV. I have an agent, and this is going to be awesome. You're like, well, it's not really. And then the thing is, everybody switches agents thinking the next place is going to be better than the other one, and they're all kind of the same.
Do you think not having an agent can hurt you at all in terms of whatever your ceiling may or not be at ESPN?
No, I don't think so. Because, you know, the other thing agents love to do is they love to tell you to go meet with all these people, right?
Correct.
So, like, I'd get a meeting set up with somebody who was in my own freaking building.
Right.
And then they would take credit for setting up the meeting, and I'd be like, I see that guy at the salad bar every day for a year. Like, what do you... Like, I could have done that. So once you start getting a little more comfortable, you're like, I can go and meet. Like, if the people that make decisions think I'm really good at ESPN, and I've been re-signed 4 times, so I imagine somebody there likes me, right? Then that's why I'm going to stay. Like, they're the ones seeing me and listening to me every single day. So I'm going to stay. The agent's not going to talk them into keeping me around when they don't want to keep me around. So I don't really get that. You know, I don't get that. I mean, unless you're, I think there are other people I work with, and I don't mind, and I totally get it. We all have different personalities. I think some people are scared to death of the idea of getting on a phone and calling somewhere else, you know, when their contract allows them to make those phone calls and saying, hey, do you think you'd ever have any interest in me down the line? You know, some people I'll see Super Bowl week, and they're in the hotel lobby, and they are working it.
Right.
You know, they are networking like you've never seen going. I'm thinking about the next deal. I'm thinking about the deal after that. I'm not really one of those guys, but I also know the phone numbers of like the 4 or 5 people that I need to call. And this is all based on the route that the phone number is actually across my campus to the guy who I talk to the most and the place I want to stay at the most, which is where I am right now. But I don't think the perceived value is there nearly enough as much as it was when I first started.
All right. I want to finish up with, in the next 20 minutes or so, with questions that readers had. And when I put out that I was going to talk to you, there was a ton of, I mean, among the most I've gotten, a ton of people wanted to hear things. And I think a lot of that is just the intimacy of radio, which is its own different animal than television. And obviously, you do TV as well. How do you decide within the course of the radio show when you're going to put out there something you know about the NBA? You mentioned this podcast that you report, you grind, you make calls, which means, you know things that are both you to the best of your ability, you believe to be true, but there are also things that you hear on guarantee that are rumor. Now, sometimes you can throw a rumor out there, as many radio people do, and, you can get a lot of attention. It may not turn out to be right, but, in the end, it might not even matter. So what's your sort of process, Ryan, when you know something about the NBA, how do you decide to put that out or not?
That's a really good question. Because I cannot emphasize it enough how much I do not envy the reporter and what they have to really do. You know what I mean? Like, those guys are on it. And when it's in print, when it's on ESPN.com, Brian Windhorst reports this, like, that's real. And you better be freaking right. I don't say anything unless I feel really, really comfortable about it. I have a lot of sources, but I'll tell you right now, I have less sources than when I started doing this NBA stuff. And I started doing it just because I love the draft. You know, I've been at the Combine the last 7 or 8 years. Like, this is what I love doing. I used to host the television show, that five-hour monstrosity on back-to-back days, because I just love the draft. I mean, the draft is my favorite day of the year. And, you just start popping up enough of these places, and being an ESPN definitely helps the profile, and guys start talking to you a little bit more. But I started weeding out the guys. I'm like, this guy's always full of shit, or this guy has no good intel, or this guy's intel is always some plant that he's trying to get something else out there. Or like, you know what, I don't need a Yugoslavian agent contact, like, because I'm never going to talk to about anybody that matters. So I'm not saying it unless I feel really, really comfortable that I know, like, this is a lock. It doesn't mean I'm always going to be right about everything. But the Jimmy Butler one I did a few weeks ago, where I talked about, basically his agents were told if he doesn't sign this kind of $40 million contract that they were going to cut his minutes back. Like, I had heard that and then heard it. And then you were like, hey, man, I heard this story. What do you have on this? And then the guy will go, I can't believe you knew that. And that's never made it out. And I go, yeah, it's been years. How come that's never gotten out there? He goes, well, no one ever knew and no one ever asked. But I knew where the story originated from. And then I knew somebody, like, if I knew the first part, then I could call, and it's very specific. So it's not me just calling a GM or calling an agent or calling a coach and saying, hey, anything new? Like, I have something. Like, I had the Durant thing so far ahead of everybody else that it drove me crazy that I didn't do it in a more defining way. But then again, I couldn't really do it that way. So it was more of like, hey, it'd be crazy if they got Durant and they'd be nuts to not clear the decks for trying to get him. If Golden State's smart about this, they could win back-to-back titles and they could still move cap pieces around to have enough room to sign Durant. That's why it used to drive me nuts when I'd have other people in the industry say, well, Durant would have never gone to Golden State if they won. I'm telling you right now, Durant wasn't watching Game 7 going, oh, wow, Kyrie made the three. That means I can sign with Golden State. Like, I felt like he was always looking to get away from Westbrook to go up there. But I have way more, I don't want to say a leash, but, like, there's – It's much more casual to do it on a radio show, but I'm not doing it. Like, you will hear me when I say, hey, this is what I'm hearing. This is exactly what I expect to happen. Like, I kind of turn into reporter there a little bit, but I'm not graded and beat up the same way the reporters are, because once it feels like it's in print in the traditional way, it just feels more dangerous. And I don't know that you have a lot of people that have ever really done it this way, at least nationally. And I think sometimes people are going to hear this podcast and be like, wait a minute, he had that first, or he had the LeBron thing back. Like, I have all this stuff. Like, when we found the Mike and Mike clip of me going through and going, they'll get rid of Bogut, they'll let Barnes move, they'll keep Livingston, they'll keep Iguodala, Azili's done, his legs are shot, and then we replayed it, and they were like, oh my God, like, he really had it. And I go, I don't know what I'm or how I'm doing it wrong, or maybe I just need to scream more about it and go, hey, everybody, look at me, look at me, look at me. This is what's happening with Golden State. I mean, maybe that's the lesson there. But the original question is just, I would never do it, man, unless I completely believed it, which doesn't mean I'm going to be 100%, but I wouldn't
I wouldn't do that to the audience because I wouldn't want to be the guy that was batting 50% on rumors so that every time I threw something out there, then everybody go, oh, you're a clown. You did all these other things wrong.
People were asking why Scott hasn't made more appearances on the show. I don't know if that was supposed to be a regular or semi-regular thing. I don't know if it's a scheduling issue, but or maybe you just wanted separation to give Danny a shot to create his own identity on the show and you didn't want to bring Scott back. Is there any particular reason why he has not been on a lot?
No, nothing nefarious. I mean, it's just, it's simple as we're both, we don't want to be there any longer than we are already. He doesn't want to come in early. He doesn't want to drive in at 3 o'clock and then sit around until 1 a.m. And, you know, I've been on his show a few times. The guys are like, why don't you want to do that more? I'm like, because I don't want to go on at midnight when I get there at 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. Like, I don't want, like, it is two guys that spend a lot of hours there already that don't want to make their days longer. I wish we had him on more. We were trying to figure out one day to have him fill in for the whole thing. I know people in the beginning thought I was doing to, like, announce the clear separation. I love that guy, and I love doing the show with him. And we would have way too much fun if he came back and did 3 hours with Danny and I. And I want to do it, but it's strictly just dudes getting older going, I don't want to come in that early.
What time do you usually get in to ESPN on a daily basis?
I'm usually there by 9. We do have one, unless I'm doing SportsCenter. I mean, there's other times I'll get in there 8. But I like to get in there at 9. If we're doing late day, you know, we'll do late day where everybody can get a big breakfast somewhere else, or Danny can take his daughters out. We'll get in at 10-ish or something like that. But we're not a show that shows up 15 minutes before we go on the air. And sometimes I wonder, maybe we'd be better off. We just try that. But like, it's the way I've never been able to do it that way. So I like to get in early and go over everything.
How much input did you have in the decision to make Danny the full-time person coming in with you?
A ton. They were awesome to me on that. I wanted it to be Danny, and I got Danny. So I know there's a bunch of rumors about this or that, or it's going to be this. But no, I mean, I wanted it to be Danny, and I just felt like college football is probably the most important property that we own right there with the NBA. And I think we do college football so well, and I think that's why our show is so good for the affiliates, because so many of the affiliates around the country are like, you know, it's still kind of a traditional, straightforward sports talk show, and these guys really know their college ball because of Danny's background and me traveling for game day. You know, I've been traveling these stadiums now for a bunch of years. I've been in almost every one that I want to be in. And I wanted to keep that going, even though I think, you know, if I had been paired with Rosenberg, it would have been a completely different show. But I love Rosenberg. I mean, he's going to be a rock star or whatever he ends up doing here, and he kind of already is, but he hated college football. And I told him, I said, look, I've worked with Danny more. I've worked with you less. I know Danny loves college football, and that's, I thought college football would be a really important thing to keep things going.
Ryan, heading forward, what are your assignments for college football and NBA basketball for both ESPN radio and television?
Football is nothing. I mean, I won't. We do some road shows, but that's Russell and Canal, so I've never done anything with those guys on the TV side, like form or anything like that. And I don't really, you know, I mean, look, we have so many great college football analysts. They don't need me just because we're like, hey, tell us about the 17th time you went to LSU. So I don't need that. NBA, I'm doing more sports centers. I definitely like to do more. You know, I'd love to be a part of Countdown, but that's probably pretty ambitious. But, you know, I've seen us do some different things with different people in the past. Like, I remember them using Cal Herd on a college football broadcast just to try something different. I know they used Bill on some NBA broadcasts.
Yep.
I'd love to try something like that. I'd love to try something with Danny and I doing some college football. Not me, it's play-by-play. Like, let's get somebody in there who knows what they're doing, because my play-by-play Trent Thunder tapes from 02 are a little dated. You know, or maybe sit with, you know, put me on the worst NBA game we have and let me be the third guy and kind of fill this hybrid role of, you know, but it's just really hard, man. Like, we don't, a lot of times the audience complains about what they get, but a lot of times the audience gives what they get because that's the only thing they'll accept, right? So if you throw me out there with two ex-players and a host and we start chopping it up, talking hoops, there's going to be a large chunk of the audience like, who the hell does Russell think he is? He's never played. When I don't break it down as fast as a guy that had great coaching and all that other stuff, but I still know what's going on in the game enough to hang there and to also go, hey, here's what I'm hearing around the league. But I'm still this talk show host, so it's this really odd fit. It's like this square. It's this star that you're trying to put in this circle. And
I think you just need somebody to say, hey, we think he's good on the air, his info's good, and he is conversational, and all the NBA guys respect me because of all the TV stuff I've done with him. Like, that'd be something I would love to do as far as having an NBA duty. But as of right now, with everything being in L.A., it's just SportsCenter. But that SportsCenter stuff has been a lot of fun, and I appreciate it because, you know, it took a while to get me on those shows. So this year, this season, I expect to crank up more. It's been a lot of fun.
All right, a couple more here, and then I'll let you go. How do you approach the partnership with someone like Danny? I mean, do you approach it sort of that you're going to be together as long as possible, or do you look at it in certain segments? I mean, the Mike and Mike thing is just amazing just because, like, sports talk
part— I can't believe it.
Yeah, they just never last that long. So how do you approach it? Because logically, if I step back from it, there's going to be a point when you and Danny will not be a partnership just because every sports partnership in radio generally ends. So how do you look at it?
I know. It's such a hard thing to understand unless you do it, because it's like getting in a relationship. I mean, it's like a marriage, except the divorces are less expensive, right? So, you know, when Scott and I are going to sit in this room for 3 or 4 hours every day, well, it's at least four, because, like, figure 4 or 5 hours a day, you're going to be in this room with this other person, and you are going to talk, and you are going to disagree, and you're going to get emotional, and other times you're going to be tired, and the other guy's in the bed. Like, you're going to be in this thing, and you're in a room for 6+ years, and that's what Scott and I were. And we had less than a handful of real heated fights, and that's from two guys that, you know, don't think they're wrong very often, two guys that can be really stubborn, and two guys that can have a temper. And Scott and I think it's incredible. Now that people know us, you know, we're like, man, you guys didn't fight that much. We're like, no, I think I can remember like all four. I think there were four like real blowout fights, and one guy would have to leave the room. And whenever we talk about it on the phone now, we start crying laughing. Danny doesn't fight with me. Danny's too nice. I'm like a bully to him sometimes, and I am afraid he might be that kid at school that's just going to absolutely lose it and start pounding on me for me giving him a hard time for a year and a half. I mean, like, some of Danny's positions, you got to beat him up for it. Like, you got to come after him and say, okay, well, I think you're nuts because of this or this or this. And then I've noticed he's gotten a lot better of looking at me and being like, well, I'm not just going to sit here and defer to you because you've been doing it longer, because I'm a friendlier personality. Like, I'm going to come back at you a little more. And he's been doing that. But as far as the end, like, I know our contracts are about the same. I've never been like, I don't want to work at ESPN. I don't want to, you know, and there's never been a moment where I go, I don't want to be at ESPN radio. It's ESPN radio, but you want it to be a show that everybody's on board with and supports. And as of right now, you know, I'm not sure. You know, like I said, kind of in the beginning of the conversation, I don't know if our show is the long play or the outdated one.
A couple people asked me about this, and my guess is that it's not the biggest thing for you, because obviously you're still on so many places. But, like, were you bothered by being bumped to Sirius, a different Sirius station or a different place on their satellite systems, ESPN Extra, as opposed to Sirius ESPN 80 for the Stephen A. Smith show that is now on, I believe, in New York, L.A., and on Sirius Channel 80?
I don't know the answer to that yet. You know, there's part of me that's like, this is a really trivial thing and it's not a big deal. There's another part of me that wonders if this is where the industry is going, where we're going to put up a lot of shows against each other so that affiliates everywhere have options, but as long as they're still going with the ESPN brand, it's kind of a win for everybody. But then I got to know how we're being judged. Like,
right.
How am I being judged? I mean, Scott and I had to go up against Stephen A., which is an in-house produced project from Mad Dog Radio. We had to go up against that while we were doing our show, and also a carryover of Feinbaum. So we had two in-house productions in our slot. And I would ask somebody about it, what are we doing here? And they'd go, well, it's the new business plan. And I'd be like, okay, but you doing that to Colin, Mike, and Mike? And it was like, what? Well, you nuts wouldn't do that to those guys. And that would kind of always get back to, like, the Scott thing with me. And finally, like, a year ago, Scott, I go, no, it doesn't feel like this is something you guys are that into. And they were like, well, you know, the scheduling and people taking time off and this, that, and the other thing. I was like, all right, so basically I should never really say anything. And he's like, yeah, don't say anything. So then I kind of let it go. And, you know, I know that I'm a worker. I know that I'm somebody that is going to, you know, put in the days of whatever it says in the deal. And, you know, I just want to make sure that I'm I'm doing this, and it's, I don't know. Like, you would imagine that me going up against somebody in our own lineup is going to cut into what I'm doing a little bit. I get along with Stephen A. ton. Like, I actually really like him. He's always been cool to me. We knew each other before. We both started working at ESPN, and I know that probably surprises people, and I know there's tons of people. My friends are like, how do you like him? I'm like, look, off air, he's really cool, man, if you ever get to know him. But I don't know if this is like a really bad sign or if it's just a development in the way we start programming our lineup. So that was a really long, I don't know.
No, but still, I mean, it feels fairly honest in that you got to ultimately see what it means. And the competing against each other that is an interesting thing and kind of a headache. But I understand if you're a management at ESPN Radio, maybe it's a smart play. You're totally... you're going to land some show and some affiliate somewhere. All right, here's the final one, Ryan, and I appreciate the time. I know you have to hit the gym, and I've been told you're dedicated.
Thank you.
You're dedicated at this, so I don't want to take you out of your
routine. No, I'm bored and I'm lonely.
It's a good place to spend your boredom and loneliness. All right, so what would be? Let's. I'm just going to take a random period here. 5 years. It could be two. I realize your contract is up before then, so just go with me on it. But what would be a satisfying place for you 5 years from now at ESPN? What would be satisfying to you professionally if you were doing this in 2022?
I'd like to have a show like Overman. I think I would be great at that. I would like to do a opening monologue. I'd like to be, I'd like to do it now. These Migos references at 41, I don't know how cool. I don't know how cool they're going to sound at 45. I don't think they're going to sound. I don't say that. Doesn't sound that cool now. I can't be saying it's for the culture at 46, throwing a Twins highlight. So I think that's one of the most fun things I've ever had the chance to do. And that was great, man. It's Kevin Wilds. It's Matt Collette, Cerosi. These guys, I will go down to New York City, and you're like, man, car service, hotel. And that's not why I want to do that job, because of car service, but... You go in and you throw in a suit and you've got all these guys, these segment producers, and I'm looking at them going, no, I want to change that. And they're like, what? They're like, usually just write the questions out. I'm like, no, I want to, I know who that guest is. And the second question, I want to do this. And then you sit there, and every day to write up those monologues is challenging, definitely. But it was so much fun. And the two that I did, I thought I killed it. I did the one on letting young people be great and stop protecting them. And then I did, if you don't like LeBron, like I don't really get it. And I left there going, that's what I want to do. But I think there's also the ego part of you where you go, wow, okay, so that means ESPN says, we want to, let's just for the answer's sake, the show's called Brasillo. Well, that means they have some real chips in it, and they think you're one of those guys. They think your voice is so important. And I do know, look, I don't want to say feel or think. I know my voice resonates with a large portion of what our audience is about. But I tell you right now that feels as far away as it ever has. So that's what I would love to do and what I know I could do. And maybe I wouldn't scream my head off for 5 straight days. But if you go back and watch those clips, and I had never read off a prompter, I had never written a monologue, so I know how much better I would get after kind of getting those different beats down and all that kind of stuff. Like I think I would kill it. If I did it for HBO, I'd get to swear too, but I don't need that. I would love to do it at ESPN, but that's they don't do that with everybody.
Yeah, HBO, man, if you get the Simmons money, it's well worth taking it, even if it's just for a year.
That may be the goal somewhere. Just can I get one of those TV deals that I see these older guys get that they get so much money and it's like, I don't worry about it.
It's nice.
I hope that's not taken as a slight.
No.
Because Bill has been as nice to me as anybody.
Yeah, and listen, anyway. I mean, the fact is, if you even get that deal, you're a success. And television is a weird thing. It's just, nobody hits 1,000 in the business. Ryan Russillo is the co-host of Russillo and Cannell. That is on, am I right, 1 to 4 Eastern, Monday to Friday? Did I have that right?
Yeah, man, come on. Yeah, we were doing so well there until then it was, but although I don't really blame you because the satellite thing's a little messed up now, so. You may have made a mistake there.
It's what is it? 12 to 3? What, seriously, what is it right now? What is
it's
it on?
1 to 4.
No, 1 to 4. Oh, I did have it right. Yeah, you're throwing me off my own podcast on ESPN Radio, simulcast on ESPN News, obviously alongside with Danny Cannell. You could also see Ryan on SportsCenter and sometimes popping up on different NBA shows. And if you're an NBA fan, which I am, and you know this, the guy not only loves the sport, but he's really prepared. And that's something I appreciate for anyone in the business, particularly someone who does daily sports talk. Ryan, you're somebody I really wanted to have on when I started this podcast, and I appreciate that we were finally able to get together. Thank you very much for being on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
Hey, man, you've always been good to me, and you thinking of me and having me on, I appreciate you even thinking of us, all right?
All right, back in the studio to wrap up. My thanks to Ryan Russillo for a very, very honest conversation, and you know, particularly with so the stuff he said about agents. I mean, that was I haven't heard that on this podcast before. We have had agents on this podcast before, but that gave you a total different blueprint of someone who doesn't have an agent now and talent who decides to walk away and really wants to do it on his own. He also gave you, I think, a really good sense of you know, just how he's thinking about dealing with politics and the whole stick to sports, don't stick to sports debate that's really going on in sports media right now. So that was a really interesting conversation. I've been wanting him on for a long time, and I appreciate that. I actually got him through Scott Van Pelt, who was cool enough to forward my email and stuff, and then Ryan got back to me. As you know, previous podcasts have been the Sports Media Roundtable with Jimmy Traina and John Oren. Numbers on that are phenomenal. Thank you very much for listening to that. Same with Jamel Hill and Michael Smith. And Mike Tirico was the guest before them. So I appreciate, numbers have been really up. So I really appreciate people listening and hope you're enjoying this stuff. All right, let me run it down for producer Lou Pellegrino, for the guys at Digital Media, at Sports Illustrated, Ben Eagle, Ryan Hunt, John Wertheim, and Chris Stone. This is Richard Deitch. We'll see you again on the Sports Illustrated Media Podcast.
This has been a Digital Media production. Find your voice.
Do you know about the Locked On Podcast Network? The number one daily sports podcast network. Locked On has a daily podcast on every NBA and NFL team, plus a growing lineup of college and MLB teams. You get a daily bite-sized podcast giving you the latest on your team from the local experts. Lakers fans, search Locked On Lakers. Cowboys fans, search Locked On Cowboys. Just search Locked On, your favorite team, on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts, or tell your smart speaker to play podcast Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.